Welcome to the show that loves all things movies. It is Let's Be Real, and on today's show we are going to be covering how The Sims is being turned into a film. How that will happen, we'll discuss it right here. We're going to be doing a review and reaction to the Alien Romulus trailer. We're going to also be discussing how OpenAI is meeting with studio executives and pushing Hollywood to use their new AI text-to-video generator called Sora. And then we're going to be capping things off with questionable quick-fire questions, our QQQ segment. So stick around for that because that one is hilarious. So I'm looking forward to that one. I'm James, that's Nayan, and we're coming to you from Australia and New Zealand today on this Sunday afternoon. So before we jump straight into things, we just want to thank you guys for joining us. Your support and engagement as we've been moving to video has been cool. Really loving to see people commenting and stuff like that, so thank you. If you do have any suggestions, ideas, topics and stuff, you know, flick us a message anywhere or a comment below, whatever it is best for you, and then who knows, it might just make it onto a show and we can discuss it. Again, appreciate you guys for joining us. So without further ado, let's just jump straight into things. All right, so The Sims, life simulation video game, one of the most popular video games of all time, and one video game I've been begging to have online and multiplayer in because I like to play it with friends. I don't like to play it by myself, but I love The Sims games. It is being turned into a film, and I have no idea how that's going to work, but it is going to be directed by the director of Loki season one, and we know how great that was. She's also going to write the film as well. That's Kate Herron. Margot Robbie and her production company, which is called Lucky Chap, or as I like to call it, Nayan, they're going to be producing the film.
I just clicked.
The Sims being a live action movie coming from that kind of video game, it shares similarities to Barbie. There's no question about that, perhaps, but that's why Margot Robbie and her team are behind this. But I think it shares a little bit more similarities with the Lego movies. I mean, Barbie has defined characters. Barbie, Ken, all that kind of stuff. Lego movie, it's not really character-based unless it's pulling in, you know, Lego Batman or Superman and stuff like that. But the main character is just a random Lego figure. But Nayan, how does The Sims look to you in your mind on how it would be as a film?
I have no idea. It's an interesting video game to be adapted into a film. Because like you said, there's not really any key characters or story with The Sims. It's just you create your own avatar and basically it's a second life, pretty much. So who knows what they're going to do. But, I mean, like you mentioned with the Lego movie, you know, that had no established characters outside of the superhero ones, so maybe they might focus on one core character and go from there, or maybe it might be a real life human that sets up their own avatar and then the film just translates into The Sims and blurs the reality for that real life character, whether what's real or what's not. I've played the games a bit. It's not quite...
That surprises me.
Shut up. It's not my cup of tea. It's not a game that I could heavily get into. So I'm not overly excited for this, but I am interested in that Margot Robbie's production company is going to be behind this, and I'm sure... Mm-hmm. Oh, and the Loki director, of course. I think we definitely have a similar hit, similar to Barbie, on our hands, you know? I mean, we've got Minecraft that's going to blow everyone's expectations next year in regards to box office, and I'm sure The Sims will do just the same because that's a widely popular gaming franchise as well. But yeah, just have to wait for more details to come out.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's funny you mentioned Minecraft because Minecraft is live action, which again makes no sense. I have no idea how this can look or feel since Minecraft is distinctly animated because of the blocks.
Yeah.
Unless they got, you know, best production design kind of set design where they chop up the New Zealand hills into blocks and then they operate that way. I would love that. But I doubt they're going to go to the extra effort for Minecraft. That's just my prediction there. But yeah, man, I'm like you. I don't know how this is going to go. I've logged shamelessly a lot of time into Sims. I love The Sims. Just because when life gets you down, you just run to the life that you want, and that is in The Sims. Get money hacks. You can't do that in the real world, but you can do it in The Sims. But that's besides the point. How this can work, I mean, what would you prefer? Would you prefer it to be just, you know, entirely in the Sims world? Or would you like it to, you know, interchange with like a real life human absorbing their life into this game and not living in the real world? How would you want the movie to go?
Probably the balance between real and fake. The way I see this going is exactly like Barbie. You know, you got Barbie Land, so I'll just refer to Barbie Land as Sims Land, where it's a virtual world and you got the real world. And I feel that a character in the real world is going to be creating their own avatar in The Sims, and then eventually the film will take place in The Sims, and the character is feeling like as if they're going to be living or having a better life in The Sims world than they do in real life. I feel it's going to be one of those types of movies, and I'm sure that there'll be some sort of moral story at the end of it, for sure.
But yeah, well, I guess the moral story would have to be, you know, using games as an escapist tool.
Yeah.
To escape from the real world, to jump into a reality that you have more control over, per se. Because, you know, you go through Barbie and it has a lot of, like, feminist background to it, and it has a lot of history that it can use, and it can really target, you know, women and being a woman, all that kind of stuff. While The Sims is just random characters, so it would have to be a more universal, I guess, hook to it in terms of people, everybody being able to escape their real life to go to one in The Sims. And I think that is probably where it can go best of all. We've heard stuff on the internet recently about how it could be very similar to The Truman Show.
Yeah.
But then that would imply that a Sim is just discovering itself and it's like realizing that it's stuck there. I don't know how that would work.
Or the Sim is actually human, but they think they're in a video game, and then they find out that it's actually real world, but then that's just a modern day Truman Show.
But I mean, like, it's very easy for me to be against this just because I can't see how it could become something. But then you look at stuff like Barbie and Lego Movie and perhaps Minecraft coming out next year. You know, we never knew what those movies would turn out like. I always thought Lego Movie was like, oh, this is dumb, how can it work, it's stupid, and it turned out to be like one of the best animated films of the 2010s, you know? So,
and spawned a whole franchise too.
Exactly, which they've just stopped for some reason. But yeah, I think there is potential in this, and I think you got a good director, and honestly, if Margot Robbie's backing it, I'm backing it. I think that's just, she picks really good stuff. She's very good at what she does. Her production company, they backed Barbie, obviously, and that turned out great, both commercially and reception-wise. But they also supported Saltburn, you know, the memeable R-rated movie, whatever we want to call it. Yeah, it supported that one, and sure, that has its divisive nature to it, but it's a bold movie to be a part of and to back, which Lucky Chap, her company, did. So I'm on board. I just need to see something from it to really get excited. Are you similar in that respect?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I guess this is just the first stage. I've just announced this, but I'm sure once we get castings and a bit more plot details, I think that's when the gears will start kicking in, I reckon.
Yeah, and one final question before we move on to our next topic. Margot Robbie, do you want her to be front and center leading this film, or should someone else kind of take this one?
Someone else take this one. Otherwise, it's just going to be compared to Barbie so much. So.
Yeah, completely agree. I mean,
and I'm pretty sure
Chris Pratt in a lead role.
I'm pretty sure Margot Robbie said that she wants to take a break from acting. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure she said that she wanted to focus on the producing side for a bit. So maybe this is her step into that.
That would be cool, yeah. I think she could. I think she's really going to flourish as a producer. Just, she knows her stuff. She knows what people want and how to make great films and what films are going to be great, I think. So I got a lot of faith in her, and I have a decent amount of faith in this movie. And I'm just glad that Kate Herron is going to get a chance to produce something like, or direct something like this, because Loki season one is so good amongst the shit of the MCU that we've had in phase four. So I'm glad she gets the opportunity to do something here.
For sure.
Yeah. All right. So, Alien Romulus, a movie I wasn't particularly too excited for because it is a franchise that is desperately trying to recapture the golden days because, you know, since Aliens, I haven't really liked much Alien stuff coming out after that, and that was ages ago. But Alien Romulus is going to be that film that tries to get us back into loving this franchise again. So the plot does follow a group of young space colonists, and they come face to face with the alien, and they're scavenging around an abandoned space station. So it sounds like a very claustrophobic, tied-in kind of movie. It stars Kaylee Spaney, who seems to really be coming up. She's in a lot of upcoming movies. It's also got Isabella Merced, and it's also directed by Fady Alvarez, who directed Evil Dead, Don't Breathe, and other horrors. So they're really focusing on that horror element by bringing in that director as well, who also wrote it. And apparently this film takes place between Alien and Aliens, so it's a little bit of an interesting thing there. The director has also said that he's shown it to James Cameron, Ridley Scott, who have both loved it for different reasons, though. And the director, Alvarez, he sought out the special effects crew from the film Aliens to help with practical sets and practical effects to really ground the VFX that are going to surround this. So, Nan, you've seen the trailer. You know these extra little details. Are you pumped for this movie? Are you excited? What did you think?
No, I'm not excited. I'm not a big fan of the Alien franchise anyway. I think, you know, it's similar to Star Wars. There's more duds than there is hits. And I swear that we've been hearing this, bringing the movie back to its roots ever since, like, Prometheus. I mean, that came out, and pretty sure that's what they said then. Alien Covenant came out, and I definitely think they said that. And now this comes out, and they're going to say that as well. So, if you're an Alien fan, I'm sure you'll be skeptical. But the cast behind it is definitely good, great as well. Kaylee Spaney is a fantastic up-and-coming actress, and I think we saw in that trailer her reacting to like horror and like being scared and stuff like that. So I think she'll be able to capture that emotion really well, fear. We don't see much of any other characters as much as we did with Kaylee Spaney. The director as well, he's known for quite a few horrors, and Don't Breathe. I know Don't Breathe is one of the most classic, all-time great horror films as well. So I think it's a solid director. It's not really Scott's. So that's a step in the right direction, I reckon. The fact that James Cameron, I don't care about Ridley Scott's opinion because, let's be real, his track
record... Who started this?
Yeah, but his track record lately is a bit... murky,
questionable. Yeah, yeah.
But the fact that James Cameron has come out and pretty much endorsed this film does have me a little bit excited for this, for sure. And I believe that the director said that most of the creatures in this film is all practical. There won't be visual effects because he doesn't like using green screens.
Fair enough.
So
yeah,
that's a cool thing to see because it's very rare nowadays where we see films with practical effects.
Yeah, for sure, man. I'm going to go in the opposite direction to you. I started out in the same direction as you in terms of, you know, we've heard all this stuff. We've heard it time and time again with all the Alien movies that have come out. And we've always kind of been disappointed by each one. But this one, you know, I hadn't heard much about it. I kind of just dismissed it because, oh, another Alien movie. I'll just wait and see how that turns out. But I had heard beforehand that James Cameron, Ridley Scott, they've both seen it, they've both loved it. And at first I'm like, oh, well, Tom Cruise said The Flash was the movie that the world needs right now, so I don't care about directors liking other directors' work. And, I mean, I highly doubt James Cameron and Ridley Scott would watch the movie and then turn to the director, look at him, and be like, that was awful. Can you go and rewrite and change everything? Like, they're not going to, like... They're not going to be bad about it, but you know. But I think it does support the other stuff we're hearing about this movie. The fact that the practical effects are coming more into play than what we've had in the past, I think that's going to add a ton of realism. I think it's going to ground the film more. And I think with this movie, the plot is exactly what it needs to be. An abandoned space station, just a really claustrophobic, they're stuck in this, you know, the space station, and they're fighting off the alien. I think that's all an alien movie needs to be. It doesn't need to, you know, span, you know, these massive like planets and all that stuff. I think just having it claustrophobic, making it deeply horror, I think that's all you need. The director, while I don't consider him to be like some great director, he's in his element here, and that's horror. Evil Dead, good. Don't Breathe, good. I think he can do something really well here. I think you got good actors behind it, and you got kind of a young bunch of actors, and I think those characters being young, I think it just adds a little bit different of an element that we've seen recently with, you know, the Alien franchise. So, man, you know, I've seen that trailer, and I watched it with headphones on. I don't know if you had, but the sound is good. It's so good, and it's just, it was scary, and I'm like, okay, this is what I want. I want this to be, like, deeply terrifying. I don't need some, like, grand lore-building, world-building thing about Alien and where it came from. Just scare the hell out of me and make me feel tense and sweat during the film. That's all I need from the Alien movies, honestly, because Aliens, I like it a touch more than Alien, and that movie is just hectic. Like, once it just gets going, like, after the first half an hour, it's just so insane, and it just doesn't stop until that last moment. I think that movie is just something that keeps you on the edge of your seat, and that's what I want from this film. I'm not ready to say, like, oh, yeah, I'm so pumped now, I'm so hype, or anything like that. But I am ready to say that I got a little bit of excitement. I'm cautiously optimistic, and, I mean, I hope it brings it back, because Alien can be good, and I got a little bit of hope now. Let's just hope I don't get disappointed again. yeah, because I will say, man, this is the final thing for me, because otherwise I'm going to be like you for the next one. So if this one doesn't get me, then, yeah, I don't care what I see. I don't care who loves it or what effects they're doing. I will not have faith in this franchise anymore. This is the last chance from me. Yeah. Oh,
shit, Alien, better watch out.
Oh, well, yeah, my opinion's going to derail the franchise. I'm sure it'll be fine. Yeah, but you know what's not going to be fine? It seems it's going to be the state of Hollywood in the next few years, because OpenAI is meeting with Hollywood executives and they're going to encourage to use the AI in filmmaking. So what that means is that the AI company OpenAI, they're going to be introducing Sora, which is a text-to-video AI generator. They're going to be presenting that and discussing potential partnerships with studios, media executives, talent agencies. And this is all happening next week. So I don't know if anyone here has seen Sora or what it is capable of, but if you go into the Instagram of OpenAI, you can see, go into the reels that they do, and you'll see what Sora is all about. Me and Nan have seen, you know, videos that Sora has done, and it's convincing. It's scarily very, very good. It does scare me a little bit, but Sora, the app, will be publicly released later this year, which means people like you and I, we can use it for our own personal use. But apparently, and Bloomberg reported this, that filmmakers, A-listers, they already have access to this. So, I mean, the scary reality is that it could already be being used to be in film without us even knowing. But now that we know that OpenAI is meeting with these Hollywood executives, Nayan, what do you think about, you know, the fact that Sora, text-to-video AI generators, may be used in the future of filmmaking to this extent?
And so it begins. The AI era of Hollywood is started next week when this meeting happens. When I was looking at the videos, I was just astounded. Like, they look fantastic. There's one with a cat. Literally looks like a cat. It's insane how great it is. And to be fair, the fact that it looks so detailed and so, like, realistic means that the visual effects companies nowadays could, you know, go down. I mean, the quality of visual effects in recent films, especially last year, The Flash, was horrendous, you know? And if an AI company can make a film look beautifully gorgeous in its CGI's sort of aspects, then I believe studios will jump out and be like, yeah, sure, why not? We'll take it on because we'll get a decent looking product.
Yeah.
The way... Now, that's not a statement to say I'm for this. In previous podcasts, we said that if they are going to use AI, it should be used as a tool to, you know, help, like, say for scripts, if someone's stuck on something or they just want a bit more ideas, they can get, you know, ChatGPT or something to write something out, and then the actual writer can go there, pull out bits and ideas and use it as inspiration. Mm-hmm. That's what I think. Mm-hmm. Sora should be used for. I can create a concept. Mm-hmm. I'll just use the green elephant one because that's the first one that comes to my head when I watch a bunch of them. The green elephant.
Oh, is that the leafy? Elephant with leaves? Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. it can... they can just get something from Sora, mm-hmm. and then they have, like, a base image on that, and they can work on that to make it better. So AI mm-hmm. will be doing the thinking, so to speak, and then the visual effect artist can, you know, actually use their craft to polish it up and make it all nice. So I think that's the best way how AI should be used in Hollywood, is as a tool, not to replace someone. And I think that was a quote in a previous podcast of ours.
Yeah, man. We've covered, you know, AI in Hollywood quite a bit now, and it seems to be getting very, very close to reality, especially, you know, seeing Sora and stuff. But I think you absolutely nailed this on the head, because, you know, it should just be a tool, and there should be regulations around using it. I think, you know, we've seen so many reports about how, whether it's Marvel or, you know, Spider-Verse films, just running their, you know, craftspeople, VFX artists, all that stuff, into the ground, long hours, no overtime, like, payments and stuff, just really bad working conditions. You can bring in the AI to do the kind of the base, the foundation of that stuff, you know, at least. And I'm not for this, I just want to have a nuanced conversation about it, but you can use Sora to, like, you know, create this kind of almost instantly for you. And then you get these VFX people in here to polish it up, craft, maybe change the vision of it a little bit, add certain details, really make it something that is absolutely beautiful. But Sora, the AI technology, can simply just be used to do the, you know, the tedious details and the tedious stuff that is, I guess, time consuming for them. And not only that, it provides better working conditions for VFX artists. It doesn't run companies into the ground in terms of, you know, trying to get these. It means less delays, more films, and better VFX in all these films. So I honestly think it can be a good thing, but it needs to be heavily, heavily regulated. There needs to be a lot of oversight from executives and from, you know, management supervisors to ensure that this isn't a replacement, it is an asset. And if it is an asset and there are regulations around it, I'm going to back it, because, you know, I don't want people, you know, working 12 to 16 hours per day on a film that comes out looking average, like Ant-Man and the Wasp. We heard all those reports and it didn't turn out very good, even visually. But if this can help them, then I'm all for it. But if it's replacing them, then I'm going to be heavily against it. And, you know, I don't like what I see on the internet regarding AI and filmmaking, because everyone's so, like, up in arms, man. They're, like, they're aggressively against AI. Like, Late Night with the Devil, I think they used 3 AI images for promoting their films. Mm-hmm. And everyone was just, like, so against it. And I'm like, it's a nuanced conversation here. You need to think about the entire picture. It's an independent film. It struggles to have, you know, the manpower behind it to, you know, do all the marketing, do all that kind of stuff. It's helping them. It doesn't take up too much creativity. I mean, if it's got, they're running out of graphic designer, perhaps there's none of the budget to afford a graphic designer for those images. Perhaps the graphic designer is focusing on other marketing material through various social media channels. Like, there's just so much that can go into it, and people just think, like, oh, no AI in films. I'm like, maybe there's a place for it. I'm not saying there is. I'm not saying there's not. But I think, yeah, like you're saying as well, if it's a tool and it can help people, I think we should be open-minded about it.
Definitely. It's just no different to using, you know, Microsoft Word or Publisher or Photoshop, you know? Mm-hmm. It's basically a tool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. that they are all tools at the end of the day. And yeah, I mean, yeah, Christopher Nolan, though, he was like, you remember his best director, when he won best director's speech, he's like, I don't know where we go from here. Well, I guess the future is now, and AI is going to, I think it's going to be a big part of the way Hollywood does films at the end of the day. But I guess we're going to have to see that. Yeah, that's going to be a very, very interesting conversation on this podcast moving forward, because there's going to be so much stuff coming out about this. Yeah.
We'll see.
How would you feel if there's, like, you know, movies that are almost entirely done by AI? Like, visually, script-wise, all that stuff.
I mean, if I didn't know about it and I loved it, I'd been on the wise, you know? Just pretty much like the Secret Invasion title screen. Like, no one knew it was AI until it was released, so it was AI, and then everyone hated it. So, I really love a director just to test a theory, to make a film purely based on AI and release it and just see the reception the world gets from it. And if it's like overwhelmingly positive, then just in an interview, just be like, oh yeah, by the way, that was actually all AI, and just watch everyone change their tune straight away.
Yeah, no, I'm completely the same with that one. But if AI does make great films, and okay, let's say it replaces people, it takes their craftsmanship out of the filmmaking, but AI does really, really great films, like, you know, Oscar contenders, at almost like a snap of the finger. How do you respond to that, personally?
I don't know. I mean, I'd obviously need to watch some, just because, you know, just to see what it's like and what AI can do. But if it's actually really good, then I think I might have to sell my soul and just watch them and enjoy them, you know? Like, hey, it's doing a better job than actual humans, so.
Yeah, I remember I got into, I think it was a deep conversation with Kyan about the potential of AI and, you know, kind of what we're seeing about it. Because, you know, from NBA League Pass, and I think I've told you about what they're doing next, is where you can scan yourself by videoing yourself in a 360-degree circle, and it, you can replace yourself over a player.
Oh, yeah.
And you can watch yourself play basketball. Like, that kind of stuff is real. So I was talking with Kyan about this, and I was saying the potential in the future is that you just create your own movies. The streaming services, they have obviously the classic movies, but then they have like a prompt section. You know, you enter the basic plot, what happens, or not, maybe not what happens, but like the premise of the film. And you decide who you want in it. If you have a scan of yourself, you can chuck yourself in it. If you want, you know, Spider-Man, and then have, you know, Batman, and then they fight it out or something, and they cry over, you know, their mothers or something. I don't know. But you could just select all the stuff. It could be a prompt section. Wait 2 hours, generates the movie for you, and you just watch it. That could be a real reality we're looking at. That is a reality I don't want, even if they are amazing films, because... then there's no, like, it's just, you can just make your own movie, like, all the time.
I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. The creativity has to start from somewhere. AI can't just do it all, I think. But, oh man, these next 5 years are going to be very, very interesting.
It is. It's going to be key as well.
Yeah.
I think, yeah. We're entering the AI era of Hollywood.
Yeah. It's going to get very... going to be interesting for sure. But what's going to get more interesting is our questionable quickfire questions. This is a new segment that we are doing for Let's Be Real here, and we're just going to call it QQQ. And this is just really abnormal, weird, wacky questions about movie related things, whether it's actors or you know, made up characters, whatever it may be. We're gonna do it, and I'm gonna ask Nan some really interesting questions. So I'm sure Nan can see my screen now. All right, Nan. So who would win in a race, Chick Hicks from Cars or Vin Diesel in his classic Dodge Charger?
I think this is a race the world needs to see. You know, we've got Mr. Family himself going one on one with a Piston Cup winner, an arrogant one as well. So, I think the story writes itself here. You know, like, you got a good guy versus a bad guy. I would like Chick Hicks to win, but unfortunately, I think the power of family just motivates Vin Diesel so much that I think he will come out on top.
Yeah, nah, I mean, you can't beat family. It's the man that has defied death 1,000 times in the most ridiculous, silliest ways. Yeah, I mean, like, Chick Hicks could do anything, man. He could light him on fire, he could blow him up. Vin Diesel would just jump to the other side and win the race. He just knows how to come out on top every single time. I agree with that one. But I think the point that I agree with most is that the world needs to see this race. And to you guys watching, I'm going to have these images that I've made for Nayan on the podcast, so you'll be able to enjoy it with us as well. All right, we'll move on to our next one now. I love the answer. Okay, so hopefully Nayan has seen these movies and their rich history. So we got, who would win in a fight? Junie and Carmen, you know, the two characters from Spy Kids, or Sharkboy and Lavagirl from the film of the same name?
This is easy. You can have all the gadgets in the world, but you're coming up against a boy that is a shark and a girl that is lava. They are going to destroy these kids, man. They're basically superheroes right here, and they're going, like, having, like, a tag team match against bloody humans with, like, little cheap spy gadgets. Like, nah, that's an easy one. Sharkboy and Lavagirl's got this easily. I mean, Lavagirl could probably fucking take on all of them. Well, she needs to still just go and set everyone on fire.
Doubling down on it. I love the confidence between Lavagirl and Sharkboy. Have you actually seen all these movies?
Yep, a very long time ago.
Just my advice, don't ever watch Sharkboy and Lavagirl. Horrendously bad. I have to disagree. I got to go Junie and Carmen, man. They took on an island full of all these random mixed animals. I mean, I don't think Sharkboy and Lavagirl could do that just because they're silly. And Sharkboy? What? Stupid. Like, it just doesn't make sense. All right, we're going to move on now. And this one's, I think this one's a competitive one. And Nayan can actually provide a little bit more context this one. He is a big UFC fan. So this one is King of the Octagon. And that's whoever's going to win in a series of rounds. So we got Conor McGregor versus Henry Cavill and Jason Momoa together in the Octagon. So it's comes out on top? So it's the king?
It's a 2-on-1.
It's a 2-on-1.
All right.
But it's McGregor.
In order to answer this question, need to ask a question. What Conor You're McGregor right, yep. are we getting? Are we getting current Conor or are we getting Conor
Prime.
5 Prime?
Prime Conor McGregor.
Oh, that changes everything.
But it's Henry Cavill and Jason Momoa at their like peak movie fitness for like Justice League, for example.
Hmm. Conor McGregor definitely has all the technical knowledge. He's in his prime. If we're going in his prime, he'll be undefeated. He's 2-time double champ. Just about to go 1-on-1 with Floyd Mayweather. You know, he's... I can tell you now, the promos for this, the shit talk that's going to go between all three of them is going to be outstanding. But I just think the numbers game is where he'll struggle. I just don't... I don't think he can take on 2 6-foot-plus, 300-pound men on his own. If it was 1-on-1 with either of them, I would back Conor McGregor. But the fact that it's 2-on-1 at the same time,
yeah.
Conor will definitely put up a good fight. He ain't going to get like absolutely smashed unless you, you know, get behind him and mm-hmm. choke him out, because that seems to be his weakness, or just kick him in the ankle. But
yeah,
yeah, I'd back Cavill and Momoa. If it's 2-1.
Fair enough.
If it's 1-on-1, it's Conor McGregor.
Especially with those, very, very hulking kind of guys, eh? Those two. Off the top of your head, Conor McGregor, what's he, 5'9", 5'10"?
I have no idea. I'm not sure.
And he's not 6 foot. He's not like a tall guy, from my memory at least. But, oh yeah, I mean, I agree with you purely, but I mean, if McGregor gets them, like, who did he... He knocked out some guy in, like, the first 15 seconds. Yeah. Jose
Aldo.
Yeah. Him. So if he gets one of them quickly, and then it's a 1-on-1, yeah, but, I don't know if he can do it, but...
But the difference is that was... I think it was flyweight? Featherweight? Was featherweight? These guys are heavyweights.
Nah, if he just jumps up and, like, hits him in the same spot, I'm sure he could do it.
Yeah.
But like I said, guys, Dan can provide a lot more context with this. He knew exactly where Conor McGregor was in his prime. So you got to trust Nane and his opinion with this one, not mine per se. All right. We got even a better one now. I don't know if Nane can provide much context to this one. But who comes out alive, Nane? Count Dooku with no arms or the younglings from the Jedi Temple?
How many younglings are we talking about here?
Just the ones that Anakin slaughtered in that room. Master Skywalker, there's too many of them. those ones there.
Okay, so let's say there was about, what, 10, 15?
I think it's about 10 of them. Yeah, yeah.
Little snots running around trying to take on Count Dooku with no arms. I mean, to be fair, I haven't seen any of the outer lore when it comes to Count Dooku, so I don't know if he can do things with his mind or his feet. But I feel arms is very key to a Sith, you know, not only to wield the Force in a lightsaber, but also to produce lightning. So unless Dooku can, you know, put lightning out of his ass or something, I'm going to have to go with the younglings, you know? Just all these 10, 15 little hyper kids just jumping on him. Count Dooku can't do anything except for wail his legs and try to roll over him. These little snots has, like, lightsabers going bang, bang, bang. So if you said Count Dooku with half an arm, maybe Count Dooku, but with no arms.
Maybe Count Dooku.
No arms.
You've got to give it to the younglings.
Yeah, it's just what can you do? It would just be like this. Like, running away. Like,
well, I think they can, at least from my knowledge about, you know, Jedi and the Sith and stuff, they can channel the Force, but not as easily without limbs. I believe that Anakin wasn't as strong with the Force in his arm that got chopped off. So he could have some use of the Force, just not much. But I might have to bet Count Dooku. That guy is a legend. And the younglings, we got to think about the mind game, man. You have to think about the psychology of these kind of scenarios, right? Take it seriously. Come on. So the younglings, man, they're in fear. They're scared. It's night. They're alone. The parents aren't there. Count Dooku walks in. Some guy with no arms, man. If you were 7, 8, 9, some dude came in, angry, had no arms, you'd be terrified. And so he can use that fear to the advantage and just chuck chairs at them, do all that kind of stuff. I think he has a good chance here. But if there's one youngling who can inspire and provide hope for the other younglings and rally them up to take him on, then yeah, if they got hope and they're not fearful, the younglings are going to take that one out. All right, let's go to another one. And we're going to make it Star Wars related again, because I think this one's the Battle of the Titans. Kevin McAllister from Home Alone, he is now a youngling in the Jedi Temple during Order 66, where Anakin comes in and slaughters them. But with Kevin McAllister there as a youngling, does Anakin come out alive?
Yes, but just... I mean, Kevin McAllister, he's basically like a Jedi, right? But just a young one? Or is he just rocks up as he is now in the Jedi team?
No, he's a youngling, man.
Okay. Yeah, same answer. Anakin will come out, but just Kevin will throw everything at him. Literally, bricks included.
Bricks?
Everything. He will get as creative, add in the elements of like lightsabers and stuff. Instead of like a swinging paint cans, you're going to have swinging lightsabers. Anakin, this is the fight, his biggest fight he will ever have to face. And you mentioned before, if there was one youngling that can inspire all these other younglings, it's old Mr. Kevin McKelly over here, you know. He'll inspire those younglings to take on Anakin. And Anakin will beat them. He will still get his job and kill all these little younglings. But God, it's going to cost him a lot. He's in for a run for his money with Kevin McAllister as a captain here.
Oh, I'm dying. I think you hit it on the head with this one. I'm going to go a little bit deeper, and I'm going to say both of them die. Kevin McAllister, man, he's going to set up, you know, ungodly traps. He's got all these different... He's got new technology at his disposal. We saw him with, you know, the foundational stuff in life, bricks. Now imagine him with technology that has real power to kill people. I mean, if he had a laser gun on top of that hotel building in Home Alone 2, he would have shot them, killed them straight up. Like, I have no doubt about that. This guy is a menace, and he is going to, he knows what Anakin's all about. He's going to go all at him, and he's going to set up traps. But I do believe that Anakin, just, he's on a very angry path, a very dark path. I think he is just going to go straight towards Kevin McAllister's throat and kill him as soon as possible. But he'll think that he defeated the mighty Kevin McAllister. But in fact, Kevin McAllister's smarter than that, man. He sets up traps outside, and Anakin dies. I think they both kill each other, and then they have the rematch in heaven. Actually, no, they're probably both not going to heaven at this point. but yeah, I think no one comes out on top. You got two people at the peak of their powers, and they're just as strong as each other and powerful as each other as well. So yeah, you got to give it equal for this one here. All right, now I got a bit of a challenge for Nain. So we got Nain's favorite animated characters. We got the Penguins of Madagascar. So if the Penguins of Madagascar, they had 1 year, 365 days, and the entirety of the US military budget, do you think they could achieve world peace?
Possibly. There's only been one instance where the world has been united, and it's the closest to world peace we ever get, and that's 2016 when Pokemon Go came out. Everyone was playing that game. Even non-Pokemon lovers are playing that game. That is the closest to world peace the world's ever going to see. But these little crafty little birds, we can see what they can do in the three films and their own TV series. They are smarter than the average human. They are, you know, more creative than the average human. Chuck in a US military budget. The world is their oyster. And these four penguins, just Kowalski alone, he can be the mascot. Everyone is just falls for the, you know, the disabled sort of animal-looking ones, you know? And that's why he's a fan favorite out of the penguins. But 1 year, military budget, the world is going to unite over four penguins.
Penguins. So you think they could, you know, stop all the famine and the war going on in the world? How would they do that with the military budget behind them?
I have no idea how they can do it. I know that they are crafty. They will find a way. If they can build a plane out of trees and debris to make it fly, they can cure world hunger, you know? They can do everything. They can stop all these wars in the Middle East and Russia and Europe and America and everywhere. You know, they can even go as far to stop global warming. That's right, the sun is no match for these penguins. They will create some sort of, like, thin their own ozone layer somehow and chuck it up in the sky to protect everyone. And they'll somehow bring the ice back into Antarctica and the Arctic, you know? So, ugh, these guys, I wouldn't be surprised if they can pull the Titanic from down the bottom of the ocean. The budget they have. That's just in 1 year. Imagine what they can do with like a whole like 4, 5, 10 years.
No, you got me, man. I got nothing else to add to this. I think you covered that one perfectly. you said it as well. The sky is the limit when you give the Penguins of Madagascar the US military budget. With that, I think they can make anything happen. And world peace is on that menu. I do worry about the time limit, though. 1 year is it's a really short amount of time to bring about world peace. Yeah.
I mean, Pokemon Go did that in like 6 months, so I think these crafty little birds, that they've got our backs.
They can do something, yeah.
I would elect them to be like the Prime Minister or President of the Earth. They got my vote.
Mine too. After the reasoning you just gave me, I think you did a fantastic answer there. I hope you enjoyed our questionable quickfire questions. Nayan, any thoughts on the questions? Next time we do the segment, do you want even more bizarre questions or should we dial it back a little bit?
Hell no. We have a whole podcast of being serious. This is just a fun, stupid segment that we can just have to, you know, have fun with and hopefully entertain our fellow viewers. Yep. So for sure, anyone has any question ideas, smack them down in the comments and let us know, and I'm sure we'll feature in future segments.
Oh, yes, yes. If you are watching, you've made it this far into our question segment, drop a question down below, and no matter how ridiculous and stupid it is or how great it is, we will answer it on the next segment of QQQ. But that will do it for us today on today's episode. We hope you guys enjoyed our discussion, particularly the last segment we just did. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Your support and engagement does mean a lot to us. If you did like hearing about us, be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube. Comment below, like, ring the bell, all that kind of stuff. If you are listening on the podcast, then yeah, just be sure to follow us and give us a rating on your podcast platform that you're listening from. And if that's too much for you, you can just find us on any social media platform that you can find, because we're on pretty much all of them. And otherwise, you know what to do. MovieGames.com, that's where you can find all of our deeper content there, box office, physical media, award season, reviews, all that stuff. Otherwise, if you are too lazy for all the things I just mentioned, you can just sign up to our weekly newsletter. The link is just below, so just sign up to that and you'll get everything delivered straight to you. Thanks again for joining us, everyone. We'll catch you next time. Keep bringing the hype. Peace.
See ya.